You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks. Bye.
Welcome to this week's episode of Sex Gets Real, listeners. This is Dawn Sarah. The Explore More Summit just wrapped up yesterday. I am very tired and also very grateful and moved and touched and cracked wide open. I just want to say two quick things. First, so many of you have been emailing and popping over to Patreon and supporting the show, which I appreciate. If you're interested, you can do as little as a dollar a month at patreon.com/sexgetsreal. It helps me to keep doing all of this amazing work. I could not do it without your support, and I want to keep doing this. I want to keep connecting with you. So please take a look. As you know, from all the sex educators I've had on the show, folks don't value sex education. So even a dollar is super helpful. Also, this week on the show is Reed Mihalko. We have a very rich discussion. The first half hour or so, we go very personal and really vulnerable in Reed talking about places where he personally is growing as a professional, some of the big questions he's grappling with around emotional labor as it's this white guy, anti-oppression work and learning from activists in his life. And it's really moving, some of the stuff that he shares. And then we shift gears and jump into some listener questions that we talk all about threesomes and polyamory and lesbian porn and sexual orientation. So I am sure you are going to love this. For those of you who aren't familiar with Reed, he is America's favorite sex geek. You can find him at readaboutsex.com and sex10xonline.com. Reed helps adults and college students create more self-esteem, more confidence, and greater health and satisfaction in and out of the bedroom, using an inspiring mix of humor, keen insight, and comprehensive sexual health information. Reed appeals to audiences of all orientations, backgrounds, ages, and identities. He's one of the only male sex and relationship experts touring the country today who can speak pragmatically to nearly all areas of sexual self-expression, intimacy, dating, and relating. Reed's mission is to give men and women new tools to transform their love lives into fulfilling, satisfying, and sustainable expressions of self. So prepare yourselves for this episode. It does run a little over an hour, but I just couldn't bear to cut anything from it because it's so rich for so many different ways. So I think there's going to be a lot of stuff that appeals to a lot of you in here. Enjoy. Don't forget to send in your confessions. Again, March and April's theme is messes. So if you have anything from physical messes to emotional messes that has to do with sex and relationships and pleasure, send those in. Details are at sexgetsreal.com. Here we go.
Welcome to the show, Reed. I'm so happy to have you here finally.
Yay!
Yay! You're here.
I'm super excited and it's fun to be to get nerdy with you. So
yeah,
let's do it.
Let's do it. So I want to know, like, what are some of the things that you've been like learning about or geeking out about lately? Like, what's turning your brain on?
Oh my goodness. Well, I mean, I'm. So I consider myself as an educator, you know, I'm a sex geek, and I don't identify as an activist, although a lot of my activist friends are like, no, you're kind of an activist. So the things that I'm wrestling with, I just feel like I'm a bad activist. And a lot of the big stuff for me that I've been wrestling on for the last couple of years and just trying to get really, you know, ingrained and get better and better at and just have more savvy is just dynamics, like what I would consider activist kind of things around like systemic oppression and racism, understanding, you know, from myself as a cisgendered white guy who's also, you know, 6 foot tall and has a couple of black belts, and just like understanding how my worldview has been informed, one by culture, but also that my lived experience is just vastly different than some of my friends and much of the world. And also, you know, wrestling with what in those circles, you know, things that are called like male fragility or you know, white fragility, the emotional responses that a person has when, you know, you start deconstructing some of this stuff as a white person. But again, like there's lots of different versions of fragility, you know, and sex and relationships. Like if you realize that your partner is kinky and you're not, then there can be all this, like, it's not the same. But like your emotional responses to things that aren't necessarily you, or that you identify with. And so like, I've been going down the rabbit hole on that a lot. And also, you know, at the time of this recording, if we just had the elections and the inauguration for now, you know, President Trump. And that is, you know, I got really rocked by that. And just trying to understand, you know, as somebody who's not very political or politically minded, like, how do I feel more effective and have more agency around helping make change, you know? So all that kind of falls in the swimming pool of activism. And I just feel like I have really poorly, you know, developed skill sets in those areas. And as a sex educator in a world where, you know, Planned Parenthood is being attacked and being defunded and stuff like that. And, you know, this is now, I mean, it's always been there for me to empower myself and be able to take more action in, but I feel like, oh my God, like now more than ever, I need to get good at this. Like I need to help, and without it being like a white savior kind of thing, but just like a good person kind of thing. I mean, so that's the stuff that I've been wrestling with, and I've been blessed with some amazing, you know, educators who are really coordinated and savvy at this stuff, who've just been really patient and generous with me in pointing me to the right, to better resources, and, you know, letting me bend their ear when I need some support.
That's really awesome. And also, it's hard work. You know, it's really hard work to confront our ideas about the world and our experiences and the privilege that each of us have and find ways to be better at, like, lifting up marginalized voices and holding space for those really, really uncomfortable feelings. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, I joined a Facebook group for femmes that was an anti-oppression group. And at the time, it felt super, super threatening to me that they were all about centering the voices of people of color. And I remember it felt oppressive to me to be in that space. And it took me a lot of time of feeling really uncomfortable and just kind of observing before I started really realizing like the importance of that and how radical it is. And now it feels a lot more comfortable for me to be at events and spaces where they center marginalized voices and where it's maybe not my time to take up space. But, you know, it took a number of years for me to start feeling more comfortable with that. And so even just being aware that that's something you want to work on and being able to sit in kind of that discomfort and uncertainty is really powerful.
And it's, and again, like for people that are listening, I'm just going to say like, this is not easy work. And I'm going to, you know, the analogy being that that getting good at anything, especially complex stuff, is gonna be challenging and is going to kick up some of your fears that might be unique to you, but certainly having fears and feeling inadequate when you're trying to get good at something new, that's not unique. Like, that's a human trait, I believe, but, right. But your unique insecurities and maybe the emotions that come up, those might be unique, you know, to you specifically, but what you're going through, the bigger picture thing, so many of us, just as human beings, go through similar things. And if you're going to start deconstructing things like privilege and systemic oppression, and like, you know, you're gonna be challenged hard. Similarly, if you're going to start actually trying to have difficult conversations, deep, difficult conversations in your relationships,
yes,
that's going to be challenging. That's going to kick up a lot of feels. But the good thing is, once you start to get the hang of being able to be with your feelings, and on a good day, take baby steps, on a bad day, be able to just pause and take care of yourself.
Right.
You know, on a really bad day, you're just backsliding. I just want to acknowledge people, because I think what, you know, this conversation is going to touch on is just some stuff that is going to, you're going to get all excited and pumped up, and we're going to get you all inspired. And then you're going to go try it, and you're going to be like, fuck, like, I'm getting my ass handed to me. That is progress. Like, that's a good thing. I'll speak for myself. And again, like, this wouldn't, I really have to say thank you to the people that were patient with me when I didn't know any better, when I was asking people questions, out of naivete and unintentionally asking them to do emotional support and emotional labor for me. And for those of you who are like, well, what does that mean? Like, look up, you know, Google it. I'm going to do you a favor right now. I'm going to tell you, you know, hit pause on the podcast and go Google emotional labor and take a look at some of the answers. But like, I didn't know these things. And so I would just kind of, with my enthusiasm and my golden retriever on espresso way and my, you know, unexamined white male privilege, I would just ask people, you know, hey, could you just do all the work for me right now and just get me caught up on this. Mm-hmm. And understanding now, like, oh my gosh, like how generous and how kind people were. And just to, you know, not name drop, but to acknowledge some people, Ignacio Rivera is one of the hugest, kindest people I know from me and my journey and all in the beginning of this journey. Cause I also think it's never going to end. Ignacio Rivera, Marsha Baczynski, Tatiana Brown, and there's just, now I'm going to get weird because I'm going to forget all the other people, Melena Williams, like there are some badass people, Bear Bergman, you know, people who just saw that I really, really cared and was just clumsy as fuck.
Yeah.
And were kind and patient with me, you know, as I started to get the hang of this. And Don, with Sex Geek Summer Camp, which is my 5-day business retreat for sex educators and just getting better at business stuff, like as that community is growing and more people feel safe to show up, I'm having to, you know, wrestle in a certain way. I'm going through a learning curve on like how to help design the community so that there's a healthy balance of, you know, you've got all the varsity upperclassmen who are, you know, quote unquote woke, who've gotten the memo and are getting pretty savvy and coordinated or already have their black belts in navigating and, you know, a lot of things around oppression and inclusivity and race and, you know, not that anyone's ever perfect, but like there's some people who are highly literate and articulate. And then camp also brings people in who haven't read any of the memos. And so I'm having the challenge of trying to come up with and crowdsource a little bit some guidelines for the community so that people can come to camp and just relax and they don't have to do emotional labor, but we're also, you know, make camp a place where people who don't know what emotional labor is, we can get them up to speed in a way that's low impact on the group. And, you know, and has people feel seen and welcome and not necessarily made wrong. Like, so, so I'm like, you know, I'm trying to nerd out on, you know, community guidelines and things and how do we make camp a place where you can let your hair down, but also expect a certain amount of, you know, freshmen who don't know where, you know, where the cafeteria is, right? Not, you know, that was more me being funny than actually comparing systemic oppression to, you know, a college campus. But it's like, again, like it's tricky, but, you know, and there are fears of mine that I'm going to do it wrong and I'm going to fuck it all up. And that's a lot of my family stuff. You know, those are the fears I have and my mom's voice yelling in my head. But at the same time, you know, it's not the end of the world, but wouldn't it be nice if we could get this designed better so that we could all be growing and relaxing at the same time? You know, and camp traditionally has drawn a lot of kick-ass feminists, you know, who are just so excited, you know, of all genders to be like, yay! And then we've got this one clueless white dude who means well, but is clunky as fuck.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, Jesus, you know. A fucking clue. And he's like, well, what do you mean by that? And he's like, I'm not going to do your emotional labor. And he's like, well, what do you mean by that? You know, and I'm like, okay, I need to figure this one out because, you know, how can we make camp helpful for everybody and not make it the responsibility of the upperclassmen to make sure the freshmen know where everything is? So that's what I'm dealing with these days. How are you?
I love it. That's all such good stuff and so relevant. And, you know, I mean, especially in the current political climate, it's wonderfully radical, you know, to be challenging yourself and asking those questions. And how can we, you know, reduce emotional labor for marginalized folks and at the same time make space for people who may not know what that is. And like, that's going to be some varsity level organizational work for you, Reed, to make that happen. But I'm confident that you can.
Well, and then again, like for me, it's like, you know, I'm doing a lot of research and geeking out, and there's some amazing community guidelines, and I invite everybody to go to WizCon. It's the Wisconsin Women's Science Fiction Conference. Awesome. Their guidelines and community standards and stuff are this organization is amazing. Allison Moon, who's my primary partner, who has written many, many books. Her latest is Girl Sex 101, which is available at girlsex101.com. She has gone to WizCon and is like, this is one of the best run conferences around inclusivity and, you know, just the protocols that they've developed over decades, because this conference has been around for a while. Their community standards and how they handle complaints and things, like, it's amazing. And I was just like, oh my Lord. So I've been reading a lot of community guidelines to just see, like, one, so I don't have to reinvent the wheel, right?
Right.
And I'm smart enough now to know that, you know, yes, as a in their 40s year old white guy, like, I'm going to come up with a perfect solution. Like, that's automatically suspect. but it's like, oh, like, there are people way smarter than me who've been around way longer than me, who've made all the mistakes and probably have figured out some really useful things.
Yeah.
And this is, again, like, this is going to be my message for the listeners who are maybe just starting their journey on deconstructing, you know, colonialism and mm-hmm. trying to figure out race and, you know, trying to figure out gender, you know, maybe not for themselves, but like, why is it important to share my pronouns when I open up a workshop?
Yeah.
If you're a workshop leader, like, these are all things. And again, like, I'm not perfect. I'm so not perfect at so much of this, but like, even, and I'll just talk to the white people, and I'll specifically, you know, talk to the white men who are listening to the podcast, or even just the men, whatever, you know, however you identify around, you know, race and whatnot. Even just getting 10, 20% better at this
mm-hmm.
is fucking huge.
Yeah.
And you might not always get appreciated for it. You're not always going to get your cookie, but that you're even trying, I'm getting all teary eyed now. It's just so fucking important. Yeah. And it's not easy. Mm-mm. But again, like, the really worthwhile things in life are not often easy, but things get easier. And it will be challenging, and it will take courage, and you will feel angry. And all I'm just saying as a cisgendered white man is, if you're feeling that, if you're feeling angry, once you start to understand privilege and how, you know, just the fact that I'm, you know, what some people think is a good looking guy, but like, that I'm a white guy standing up in front of the room, people just assume I know what I'm talking about. And they just give me a certain kind of status that, you know, some of my friends who are way fucking smarter than me, way smarter, they just won't be taken seriously in the same way. And so, you know, you're going to have feelings come up, but understand that if you're feeling put out and, you know, disregarded, just try to imagine what that must feel like for, you know, somebody who is not white.
Yeah.
You know, or somebody who is, you know, not being taken seriously because they're a woman,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, not seen as a vibrant sexual human being because, you know, they walk with a cane or like whatever. Like, there's so many things that we could list. And that we're just never going to be perfect at this,
mm-hmm.
but that you try is so important. You know, when I'm talking to college campuses, and especially when I'm talking to athletes on college campuses about rape culture and preventing sexual assault, the analogy I use is in sports is called court awareness. You know, the idea that, like, if you're a basketball player, for example, and you know where all of your fellow players and the opponents are on the court when mm-hmm. when you're dribbling down the basketball court, like, knowing where everyone is, that kind of awareness makes you a better ball player. You know, Michael Jordan could pull off these crazy behind the back passes, and you're like, how did he even know his teammate was there? Like, 'cause he had court awareness. And so when I'm talking to men on college campuses, I'm like, you know, if you think about deconstructing these aspects of culture and understanding, you know, sexism and understanding consent and consent culture and rape culture, like, you have more court awareness.
Yeah.
And you start to be able to see things that other people on the court cannot see. And you just become a better ball player. Like, you become a better human being.
Yeah.
And, you know, to use the analogy. So, you know, developing cultural court awareness
mm-hmm.
is hard.
Yeah.
But what you get out of it as a human being, I'm just going to tell you to trust me if you'll trust me. It's worth it. And, you know, if you want to actually help try to make the world a better place, I think this is one of those things you need to start paying attention to.
Yeah.
And again, like, it's not going to win you a bunch of awards.
Mm-mm.
Like, not everybody's going to come up to you. And, you know, the joke, for people who don't know the joke, is you get your cookie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, look, I'm a white person who's not being racist. Where's my cookie?
Right.
You know, like, you're not going to get your cookies from everybody. And, you know, come talk to me. I'll be like, you know, here's your verbal cookie. Good job. Now get back on the court and make the world a better place.
Yeah. Because
our work is not done. So, I don't know. I feel conflicted about a lot of, I'm just having a lot of feels.
Yeah.
And I already have, you know, in just normal human being insecurities about doing a good job and wanting to help. And so when is my wanting to help useful? And when is it me trying to be the white savior complex, you know, who also as a comic book nerd, you know, has a Superman complex. So like, I'm perfect for just, you know, needing to learn the lesson of Reed, shut the fuck up and let other people talk because you don't know what you're talking about. And that's been huge for me.
Yeah.
To listen more rather than just rush in and fix it mode and think I actually know what the situation requires.
Yeah. Yeah. The listening part is so important. And also, you know, one of the things I think that's been really important for me is realizing that like, while I do know a lot and I've learned a lot, I in no way am an expert, and the people from all the marginalized communities are always going to know more than me because they have the lived experiences, and and also giving myself permission to like mess up. Right. And like, I just recently interviewed Maria, Karimji, who is a female genital mutilation survivor. And in the interview, I felt like there was a couple of points when I asked questions that were a little insensitive and, you know, giving myself permission to have made those mistakes. And like, you know, that's me learning. The fact that I recognized that I could have asked better questions, and she was so graceful and generous in responding to the questions, you know, and like, it's hard to grow and to realize when you mess up and also not like totally beat the shit out of yourself over it, you know, and get hung up on it. Cause then you're not moving forward either.
Yeah. And I think that that's, I mean, yeah. And this is, can we jump, this is tangentially a topic, but I think the emotional piece is there too, but there's a bunch of, I'm noticing, I could be completely wrong. And probably often am, and I don't know if people will come and tell me. so how accurate is my information? But you know, in the kink and sex geek world, there's been the last couple of years a lot of consent stuff and abuse stuff going on, and you know, some with peers and some with other communities where people feel safe to reach out to me for my advice, as somebody who's very promiscuous and sleeps with a lot of people, and knock on wood, you know, I seem to be leaving people feeling better about themselves and our experiences than worse. And I'm knocking on wood right now because what I've noticed as somebody who has done work with people who survived certain kinds of abuse growing up, physical, emotional stuff. One of the things when I'm talking to people in the Tantra community who do Tantra for a living, one of the things that Tantra is sorely deficient in is people teaching Tantra teachers and hands-on, hands-in practitioners how to work with trauma survivors.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of experience with it, but I also, you know, would not say that I'm an expert in these things. And I've had some people who are experts in these things spend some amazing time with me just having brain sex and talking about different concepts and you know, helping people through trauma. And kind of re-anchoring like somatic experiences and things like that. But in the Tantra community, there's not a lot of people talking about those things. And there's a little bit of denial, not everywhere. I don't know every Tantra teacher on the planet, but you know, there's a lot of people who just don't, they just, well, you know, I have had no complaints, so everything's fine.
Right.
And what I need to remind them is that you have no complaints doesn't mean everything's perfect. What it means is that you're not hearing somebody, or if you're working with trauma survivors, there's a lot of times people don't know how to speak up.
Right.
And something goes sideways for them.
Yep.
And, you know, what I, when I do, you know, do mentoring and whatnot, coaching for tantra practitioners, I'm like, so here's what I've noticed. If something weird or sideways happens, let's assume everybody's intentions are good and you don't mean to, you know, you're not being slimy and creepy and just sloppy, but let's say something happens and somebody couldn't speak up in the moment because they've had their agency and their voice taken away. It's, you know, what I've noticed is it's at least 18 months to 2 years, if not 4 years, for people, if they continue on their path to their healing, will find their voice.
Yes.
And then speak up. And yep. So as a tantra practitioner, I'm just going to let you know that in the same way, like, this is a bad analogy, but it's the one that's in my head right now. Like, you know, you're supposed to save your tax receipts for 7 years in case you get audited. I'm just going to let you know that the work you're doing today, if no one complains 4 to 5 years from now, you can then start to think that you probably did the right thing.
Yeah.
But human beings don't think like that. And then what happens is when somebody does finally find their voice and speaks up and, you know, finds their voice and can bring the complaint to the actual practitioner, almost inevitably, because there is no training, the practitioner says, well, why didn't you speak up when it happened?
Right.
Which is indicative of you don't understand the concept. You know, what you need to do is when anybody comes to you with a complaint, and I think this is good advice for just business owners in general, and even for interpersonal relationships, when somebody comes to you with a complaint, your immediate knee-jerk response, please, please, please train yourself to do this, is thank you so much for bringing this to me. Please tell me more. Because that is not the response most abuse survivors got when they've spoken up about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when I'm teaching people in the tantra world, I'm like, you know, so this is your response. Thank you so much for bringing this to me. Please tell me more.
Yeah.
And that act alone shifts what's possible.
Yes.
Around the healing. And that it's not a turnaround time situation. It's a people will speak up when they can. And it might take a while. And where, you know, all of this stuff is, you know, another area that I've been geeking out on and just trying to like marinate in is like what's missing in our sex geek communities where, you know, there's victim-centered approaches to supporting mm-hmm. folks around consent violations and things like that and abuse. What are the things that we're missing as a community that we can be putting in, like front loading, that's going to help everybody? And so I haven't gotten super far into this yet, but like the restorative justice communities, and a transformational justice, because there's a distinction and I'm still trying to figure out if I understand the distinction, like I'm just, you know, I'm like a white belt. Maybe I have a green stripe in this, but like there are some people who have been doing some heavy lifting and geeking out and field testing approaches that a lot of kink communities don't have yet. A lot of poly communities don't have yet. Or the play party communities, you know, whether it's swinger, poly, queer, kink, like they don't have yet. Mm-hmm. And so again, like I'm trying, you know, I know well enough to one, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It's not the best approach. It's not the most effective and economical use of energies. And, you know, it's, you know, the technologies and the approaches that are already out there aren't widespread yet. And so that's another area that I've been, you know, just kind of like talking shop with you and thinking that, you know, yeah. Everyone who's listening, this might be interesting. The communities around play parties and stuff like that, those play parties are not going to go away.
Nope.
If anything, they're going to become more and more pervasive. Mm-hmm. And what can we do as community leaders or enthusiasts of play party space, or even just, you know, hookup space? What are the tools and techniques we can bring in?
Yeah.
So that the communities as a whole are healthier and able to handle, not handle, like things need to be air quote handled, but like we can respond in more empowering ways for everybody mm-hmm. when there's a mishap, or where somebody gets into a community who is malicious and malintended.
Yeah.
Versus just clumsy, you know, and that's what's been so interesting in restorative and transformational justice approaches is, you know, some people without better approaches, all you have is you banish somebody from your community,
right?
Which just sends them to another community.
Yeah, to do it all over again.
Yeah, and so like I'm really trying to inform myself on these things, so that I can actually have intelligent conversations with people who are experts at this rather than come to them like it's some bad kung fu movie and be like, master, teach me everything, you know, which is so annoying to the master.
Teach me all the things so I don't have to do any work.
Yeah. And it's really, I want to see the kung fu, the black belt theater movie where the master just goes, Google fucking exists. Come back when you're ready. You know, like, it's like when the student is ready, Google fucking exists. Like, somebody put that on a t-shirt and send it to me, please.
Those are such rich things to be thinking about and rolling around in. And like, yeah. Well, would you like to shake things up and help me field some listener questions?
Yes, listener questions.
Okay.
Yay.
Okay, let's do it. So we are going to go from restorative justice and racial justice and inclusivity and trauma to all kinds of questions about like threesomes and poly and sexual identity.
Yay.
Yay. So, okay. So I have this question from Lauren and the subject line is sexual identity confusion. Mm-hmm. And here's her message. It says, hi, I wanted to let you know how beneficial your show has been to my sex life. I feel so much more comfortable talking about sex and being more open to sexual experiences. So thank you. I'm contacting you today because I'm feeling confused in regard to my sexual identity. In the past 6 months, I've started watching porn. After this, I realized that I really liked watching lesbian sex. I especially liked watching girls eat each other out. I still watch some straight people having sex, but I tend to gravitate towards the lesbian scenes or threesome sex that are FFM. I consider myself a straight 24-year-old female, and I have not had many lesbian experiences. I have a history of making out with other women while drunk, and I've been fingered by a female before. But now I'm confused regarding my sexual orientation because of how much I'm turned on by watching lesbian sex and fantasizing about having sex with other women. I know sexuality can be somewhat fluid, but can you please help me figure this out? I'm so confused. Thank you so much.
Yay, Lauren.
Yeah.
That's great. You have thoughtful listeners who write in well. Like, we should all wish for great questions like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, so my you know, off-the-cuff podcast answer for this kind of thing is, you know, the first thing is understanding that what turns you on is whatever turns you on. Mm-hmm. And that also, you know, I think people get worried because they find something that's new and erotic for them. And then they're like, oh my goodness, like, what does this mean? Yes. Because, you know, our brain thinks in kind of like a forever mode, right? It's like, oh my goodness, if this is turning me on now, like I'm going to be this way forever. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, you know, a little bit like when you find that new song or, you know, when people used to listen to entire albums back when there were things like albums and not just iTunes singles. But like you find that song and you just want it on repeat.
Yeah.
All the time. And that's me. And I drive Allison and my roommates crazy because, you know, they were not very fond of my Justin Bieber phase. I'll just put it at that, which was followed directly by Katy Perry. And then the you know the coup de gras, whatever the French phrase is that I just butchered that means like you know the killing blow was Bieber, Katy Perry, and then Timberlake, and then they were done with me. Like they were done.
They were like, "That's it, get out."
But I'm telling you, that was at least 7 months of me listening to each one of those people over and over and over again. And it just made me happy. And I know that about myself. But I know that at some point, you know, it's going to shift. So, you know, if you're worried that this thing that's turning you on, like you're stuck with it forever, understand that your tastes and whatnot, your predilections might shift. Mm-hmm. You might always be fond of, you know, lesbian porn. But, you know, maybe 2 years from now, you'll be into spanking. Who knows, right? We can't predict those things because, you know, what is our turn on and what drives our and fuels our fantasies, you know, those things are unpredictable, which if uncertainty freaks you out, you will be freaked out. But if uncertainty is kind of erotic and a turn on and exciting and means you're alive, then guess what? You will be excited and alive. Mm-hmm. Not putting judgment on what you're turned on by. And understanding that what turns you on doesn't mean that you are that. That is not your orientation. There are plenty of people who, you know, will fantasize about whatever, you know, being kidnapped or abducted, who actually do not want to actually be abducted. Mm-hmm. Just because you're getting turned on by lesbian porn does not mean you are a lesbian or that you will turn into a lesbian. You know, and to borrow the phrase from Dan Savage, you're not going to catch the gay, so to speak. And then understanding the nuances of, you know, gender versus sexual orientation versus what's erotic. You know, there are a lot of, I have a lot of friends who are lesbians who can't get enough of the muff. And the porn that they watch is gay porn. Because, you know, guys fucking each other turns them on. So I think, you know, understanding that most people have a very rudimentary understanding, because culture basically gives us a very rudimentary understanding of the nuances of sexuality and orientation and turn on and fantasy.
Yeah.
And that, oh, okay. So, you know, to make it reductive and simplistic, I have discovered lesbian porn and this is what I want to get off to.
Yeah.
And I enjoy the endorphins and the erotic, you know, charge of this. And so naturally my brain wants to keep revisiting it just like I kept revisiting my Justin Bieber songs. And now I've now made a comparison to Justin Bieber and lesbian porn, but you know, take a look at him when he was, you know, early Justin Bieber, you judge whether he looks like a baby dyke or not. I don't know.
Right.
Yep.
I totally agree. Yeah. And I mean, I think one of the other things too, that we can give ourselves permission around when it comes to our sexual identity is we don't have to label it. We don't have to, you know, I mean, it's, it's something that we can sit with and be unsure of and try on and play with. And that can certainly change. I mean, I know I went from being very straight to very lesbian to then very queer. And, you know, I mean, I've had different sexual identities as I've gained different experiences and partnered with different types of people and different types of bodies. And, you know, so I think that there's something really beautiful in being able to say, I'm not really sure right now. I identify as straight, but that could change. That gives you so much more flexibility, Lauren, in being able to give yourself permission that if down the road you have an opportunity to engage in some delicious lesbian sex, maybe you'll love it and maybe you won't. So if you're not like tying yourself to a certain label, it gives you more flexibility to be able to actually just have your lived experiences instead of trying to force yourself to like something or to force yourself to not like something. So
absolutely. And this idea, especially in the queer world, right, that am I queer enough?
Yeah.
Like being a good queer, just like being a good straight person, right? Like, oh my goodness, you know, I'm a dude who explored and sucked dick in college, does that mean I'm not straight anymore? I'm a big fan of, you know, and again, like, these might be big reductive concepts, but the first thing is you're allowed to like what you're like, mm-hmm. and not like what you don't like. Like, you're not a bad lesbian if you don't like eating pussy.
Yeah.
Now, somebody might say, well, you're a bad lesbian. But, like, please tell them that Reed Mahalko said suck it. Because, like, you're allowed to identify however you want. You know, yeah. you can be a lesbian and like dick every once in a while. Or all totally. The time. Like, I'm not going to judge. My big questions are you happy? Mm-hmm. Like, are you having are you creating a life that, are you taking these tools that are being talked about on your podcast and in other realms? Are you taking these tools and building the life that you want?
Yeah.
Or are you building a box to beat yourself up in because of standards that culture is giving us that are bullshit?
Yep.
And, you know, so you're allowed to like what you like and not like what you don't like. It doesn't mean you're broken or unevolved if there's something you don't like to do sexually. Because our overachievingness in the bedroom has seeped in, you know, in American culture into the bedroom. So, like, if you're not squirting across the room and knocking over a lamp, you know, or if you can't, like, you know, if your partner can't do chin-ups on your cock because the erection's not hard, like, it's all weird. Like, mm-hmm. let it go, folks. Like, can we just reclaim mediocre sex for once?
Yeah.
So you're allowed to like what you like, not like what you don't like, but then also you're allowed to identify however you want.
Yeah.
Other people might have a problem with it. And I think there might be some, you can take that advice around identifying however you want and like go a little bit too far. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm a cisgendered white guy. Like, if I identified as a person of color, that might be problematic.
Yeah.
But you could also get really informed about these kind of nuances and be able to have an articulate discussion mm-hmm. with people who disagree with you, but who are willing to have the conversation. I mean, I'd love to hear me back that up, but you know, you're allowed to let everybody have their opinion and be like, no, like, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. Or you're wrong. But at the same time, at the end of the day, you have to live with you. Go be you. And ideally date your species, like, hang out with and surround yourself, not in an echo chamber, but with people who love you for who you are.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah. you know, so those would be my three big bits of advice. And again, your mileage may vary. Take what's useful that comes out of my mouth and use it. And the other stuff, chuck it, because my advice isn't for everybody.
I think that's wonderful advice for Lauren. And I think just what you offered of, like, enjoy that you enjoy lesbian porn and, you know, feel comfortable labeling yourself with what feels like it fits, and also mm-hmm. give yourself permission to change your mind and change that label. And I think that you're going to be a lot better off than if you try to say, I'm a lesbian now, and then don't allow yourself the opportunity to have different types of experiences.
Yep.
Yay. Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening and writing in, Lauren, with your super thoughtful question. I have a different question from someone named Jenny, and the subject line is polyamory. So here's the question. It says, first, I love the show. I've been binging 8 hours worth every day at work to get caught up. I've heard you talk about poly in the sense of how to get started, dealing with jealousy and different types of poly. But what about the main relationship? My gal and I have been talking about poly since before we became a couple, which is on and off for over a year and a half now. I'm open to it, but my main concern is keeping our relationship healthy and loving. As of right now, I don't feel my needs or wants are being met, and I wish our communication was better. I've tried talking with her and will continue because us is important to me. So thank you so much for your time and for any advice that you have. Lonely in love.
Hmm.
Yeah.
My brain was going in so many different directions because I think that's a very deep question. But like so I'm embarrassed now, but I'm like, and feel free to edit this out, but also feel free to keep it in. Could you just repeat succinctly like the actual question in like a sentence? because I literally went in like 8 different directions at once.
No, it's totally okay. There's a lot in this very short email. Yeah. So basically, Lonely in Love wants to know, how do you keep your primary relationship healthy and loving in a poly situation? And I think an important add-on is that she doesn't currently feel like her needs or wants are being met, and they don't communicate very well. So she's kind of scared about poly being an option.
Great. Thank you so much for that.
You're so welcome.
So here's a couple of things to just kind of the way that I would like answer this with, like, if we're spinning plates, I'm going to put a couple of plates on the sticks and we're going to spin them all at the same time. So the first plate is, there's, if you're not getting your needs met, the first thing to start looking at for yourself is, like, what are those needs? Like, can you write them down? And can you put each need on a post-it note? And this is like a little trick that I don't think I came up with this. I think somebody else came up with this, but I'll take credit for it because I can't remember who this was. But if somebody's like, Reed, I gave you that. Or somebody says, I taught Reed Mihalko the post-it note thing. Believe them, because it wasn't me then. but the idea is, in relationships, if what you need to communicate you can't fit on a post-it note, it's not simplified and it's not at its essence yet. Because in communicating in your relationships, understand that you in your head, for the most part, make way more sense to yourself than to your partner who hasn't heard yet that your needs aren't being met. Mm-hmm. So one, can you start figuring out what those needs actually are? And can you then communicate them succinctly in a sentence or two? And a good test is the post-it note test. Can you fit it on a post-it note? So, because one, if you don't have clarity and you can't be clear, it's going to be really hard for your partner or even your friend or your coworker, because this is about communication, to be able to understand what you're saying. And if you are taking the time with them to flesh it out, and if that's not their processing style, they will probably start getting caught up in their own head about what they did, quote unquote, wrong. And then you're pushing clarity and connection further apart. So I usually recommend, figure out what your needs are in this situation, and then can you communicate them clearly? Once you figure that's one plate. We're spinning that plate. It's not going to fall off anytime soon. The next plate is, do you have a relationship where you two can have a conversation that's that kind of depth? Because a lot of people have spent a lot of time being in a relationship where they avoid talking about the things they're afraid are going to ruin the relationship. So if you have a relationship where you can talk about anything, and by talk, I mean actually have a conversation that creates completion or agreement that this conversation will never be complete, versus the way my mom and dad would talk is they would blurt something out, and then there would be a fight, and then there'd be a lot of door slamming, and then that thing would never get, there'd be no forward movement on that thing. So if you have a relationship where you can talk about anything and actually have a dialogue, I just want to acknowledge you. You are light years ahead. You're like Star Trek compared to everybody else in relationships and communicating. Like, you are using warp drive and can actually have scary grown-up conversations and move through them, like work together. If you don't have that kind of relationship, starting to build that kind of ability in your relationship, that is going to be healthy, whether you're monogamous, whether you're kinky, whether you're polyamorous or a swinger or vanilla, whatever. That's the biggest missing piece for people in relationships in general, is they don't have that kind of communication ability built into their relationship yet. Their communication muscles are not, you know, they didn't go to the communication gym and work out and build those muscles. So those, you know, they want to bring up these big topics, mm-hmm. but they can't. If you don't have those abilities, then go hire a therapist that works for both of you and have them be the mediator. Like, they can be the person at the gym who's spotting you guys while you work out. So that's the other plate. Start building that relationship where you can have those conversations. And then the third plate, to just keep it to three plates, because we could probably put a ton of them, is understanding new relationship energy as a concept, which, you know, really only gets talked about in poly, because and also like in kink as well, but like in the swinger community, you're not supposed to fall in love. So they don't talk about new relationship energy. In monogamy, you're not supposed to fall in love. So we don't talk about new relationship energy. In poly, you're allowed to fall in love. So understanding and doing some you know, geeking out on new relationship energy and how, when you start dating somebody or have a huge crush on somebody or fall in love with somebody, your brain is so hooked on that person that you will prioritize them consciously and unconsciously, because that's where the new high is. That's, they're your cocaine dealer, basically. Yeah. And you are really into your cocaine dealer. So, and so there's a tendency to forget about your other relationships. So, you know, understand what you're like when you're in love. And how do you prioritize your primary relationship in getting, in helping the relationship you two have get the relationship needs met, and also understand what the needs are of your partner, who has hopefully written things down on a post-it note for you, so that you can support each other in getting those needs met too. And one of the easiest places to start looking is, I recommend everybody read Gary Chapman's The Five Love Languages.
Yeah.
That will help a lot for having your partners and loved ones feel loved while you're, you know, completely stoned on somebody else. So those would be my three spinning plates in my circus routine of answering this question today.
I love it. I love all three of those plates. And I think the important thing, too, is, if at any point, especially plate number three, starts to wobble or you drop it, and once you've opened the relationship up, there are some oops or some hurt feelings, having the ability to articulate your needs and also having the ability to have those really awkward and weird and uncertain conversations is going to be what gets you through and to the other side. And keeping things strong and healthy through mistakes, and even like creating better relationships through mistakes. But you have to be able to have those weird, awkward conversations multiple times, right? To get through that stuff. So I think you're so right. Like, those first two plates are super important to get you through when you start kind of dropping some of the other plates, which is just part of life and happening and having other relationships. And, you know, like, sometimes shit just goes wrong.
Yeah, and also understand giving yourself and each other grace that you're not going to get good at this right away. Mm. Like, this is not the thing. You listen to a podcast and then all of a sudden you know how to spin plates.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be, you know, work, but it is so rewarding. So rewarding. And your ability to get better at these things just makes you so much more powerful in relationships.
Well, Jenny, I hope that Reed's amazing advice is helpful to you, or at least gives you some points of thought and places to start doing a little practice and research. Please report back and let us know how things are going once you've kind of chewed on that a little bit. Okay, so I have one last question that I would love to run past you, and it's about threesomes, and I think that maybe you have a little bit of experience with threesomes, so maybe you can help me answer this.
I'll try.
You'll do your best. You will try. Okay, well, Riffle wrote in about a bi male couple exploring threesomes, so here's what he says. I'm a bi man engaged to another bi man, and we are philosophically poly, but currently monogamous. We're exploring the idea of MMF and, to a lesser degree, MMM threesomes. I recently discovered your podcast thanks to Kate McCombs. Yay, Kate.
Yay, Kate.
Yeah. and I've been binging over the holiday break with special attention paid to episodes that talk about threesomes. I'm hoping that you can help me with two things. First, finding a third seems like a real challenge. On one hand, my partner doesn't do sex with strangers because it doesn't turn him on. But on the other hand, I do. And sex with people we know freaks me out a bit. So how do we find a third? And then secondly, what configurations and positions work for people who do MMF or MMM threesomes? I'm curious. Thanks for all you do. Your exploration of these subjects has been mind-expanding and already very helpful for the relationship with my fiancé.
Mm. Wow. Threesomes. These are great questions. Your people rock.
They really do.
So, yeah. Okay, so first off, before I forget, people can go to my website and click on the store. And I actually have an audio recording talk about initiating successful threesomes. And there's a little workbook. So I would just recommend for people who have the funds to buy a program, that's probably going to help a lot. And the verbal answer, without the, writing exercises and stuff like that, the verbal answer on this situation is you're always, like, just in sex in general, but especially with group dynamics, right? Because this is also advice not just for three-ways, but for moresomes.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for what makes you and the other people feel emotionally safe and physically safe. And, air quotes around safe, because, something can always go wrong, and people can get triggered or anxious about stuff in the moment. But generally speaking, what is going to have people who are in relationships feel secure and safe about the relationship?
Mm-hmm.
And, what's going to have you feel like you can show up more fully? Even with some people, like, what is erotic about group sex is that it feels dangerous. But it's not, you want to create, like, it's not actually no one's in danger. One of the great questions when I'm coaching people around threesomes is, okay, so, one of the first questions is partner, like people you know or strangers. And in this, eloquently written situation, it was like, well, my partner wants people we know and I like stranger sex. So one of the, off the cuff solutions is, well, then have your partner go find somebody for you guys to sleep with. So that they get to know them, but then they're a stranger for you when they get into the bed, right?
Mm, yeah.
If that's the prerequisite, like you don't like sleeping with people that you know, if that is, negotiable, then having you both find somebody that you want to sleep with, that your partner then feels connected to, like they know, is going to be probably the easiest thing to go for. Because in this situation, if knowing the person isn't unsafe for you and knowing the person is safe for your partner, then you always kind of go with the lowest common denominator on safety. Or actually, it's probably I could word that better. You go with the simplest way that makes, where the safety starts for everybody involved, right? So in this situation, if you can sleep with strangers or people you know, your partner's need is that it be somebody they know. So the situation gets centered around, okay, so we find somebody we know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like when you're playing with this, the same approach applies with safer sex. If you always go with the person who needs the most, you start there. So if everybody's playing together and for whatever people's safer sex needs, they require that everybody uses gloves for genital contact and fluid exchange contact, then even if you're okay with not using gloves, you wear gloves.
Mm-hmm.
Like you safety it up to the person who requires quote unquote the most, because that's where the safety starts for all involved. Does that make sense? Did I say that?
Absolutely.
Well?
Yeah. That, you okay, said good. That great.
Yeah. So this applies, you know, when you're just thinking about emotional safety in group dynamics. So, okay. So now the question is, we need to find somebody that my partner knows for this to be a go. Okay. So where do you go to find somebody that you know who would be up for and a good choice, mm-hmm. a smart choice for a threesome, not just somebody who's drunk enough to have a threesome, right? Like Bob, right. your coworker, Jen is drunk enough to have a threesome. You know, Jen, therefore we must have the threesome with Jen. It doesn't work that way, right? You want to pick somebody you want to stack the deck in your favor to having a successful three-way. So is that somebody who has already had many successful threesomes? That would be a good person to start with. Is it somebody who, you know, maybe they've never had a threesome, but have excellent communication skills, know how to use their words around the sex that they have? Is somebody that has good, safer sex practices? When you start like listing all of these things, you're like, oh my goodness, how are we ever going to find that person? Trust me, they're out there. You just need to start hanging out or looking for these people in what I would call watering holes. Mm-hmm. Like when I talk about dating your species, which is another thing that I talk about, and I also have a thing on my store about, it's like, we live in this world where we think if we get more and more specific with what we're searching for, we're never going to find that person because it's too much to ask for. And I'm going to tell you all that the internet has been around for a while. You can get really specific with when you're Googling something. The more specific you are in what you're Googling for, often the better your search results are. So we just don't think about this when it comes to sex and relationships. And admittedly, if you live in a town of, you know, 500 people, maybe there isn't somebody in your town that's into all the things you're into. But if you start expanding the range of your search, you might find people that are more, quote unquote, perfect for the thing that you're looking for. So in this situation around threesomes, what communities can you find or tap into that would have people that would be interested in having threesomes or already talking about open relationships, group sex dynamics? Like, where would these people be hanging out? And now you're into the realm of, okay, poly munches and polyamory conferences and things like that. You know, polyamory Facebook groups, if you like using Facebook. You can even, you know, there's a lot of poly people seem to have good results with certain dating sites where the algorithms are more attuned to people who know what they're looking for. You know, match.com is better for people algorithmically who don't know what they need because mm-hmm. The way that they do their questions and everything, it helps people find clarity. Whereas, like Kettle of Fish or OkCupid. OkCupid's really good for people who already know what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Around questions and things like that. There's FetLife. So FetLife.com is like the kinky version of Facebook. You know, you could search there. But the more you're clear about what you're looking for, you want to put that clarity out there and see who responds to it. Because you want to scare away all the people who are bad fits.
Yes, please do that.
Yeah, because it'll save you less headache. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't sound like in the question that your listener sent in that you and your partner, your life's calling is to help people through their first three-way.
Right.
So, you know, there are people out there who love being other people's firsts and they're just better at it. But it sounds like you and your partner would do better with finding somebody who's had a couple of threesomes, who loves having guy three ways, mm-hmm. Or somebody who's interested in having that, but has a lot of great communication skills already. Ideally, you find the person who has all those things, and then they get to have the great joy of being your first together. And then, you know, the in the bed advice is go slow, don't make it all about the sex. Like, put more crayons in your crayon box of what a threesome means. If it's all three of you in your shower, you know, loofahing each other down and making out, I think that's a win.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to look like the threesome experience that you see commonly portrayed in porn.
Right. Yeah. So having those additional crayons will help if somebody's penis mm-hmm. decides not to cooperate, or if somebody comes really quickly and takes some time to recover because all the nerves are so high, especially on that first time. Yeah. So I love that advice of like, allow it to be erotic and maybe not in the porn way. You know, maybe yeah. it's not like penises in holes or something. So
yeah. Three yeah. people in a bed just touching each, like just cuddling. Do you realize how many people on the planet want to experience something like that, but will never? Like, just cuddling, just a three-way kiss is a serious win in my, you know, my, you know, to-do list for the day.
yes. Just like giggling over here. I love that. You gave such amazing advice, and hopefully, Riffle, you got some tidbits that you can share with your fiance about navigating that threesome experience that you're both eager for. And yeah, I just want to offer, take your time and just make sure that you both feel good. And also let it be weird and awkward if it's weird and awkward that first mm-hmm. time, or even the first couple of times. Like sometimes yeah. weird and awkward is just what you have to go through to figure out what you really want and what really works. So also allow for that to be kind of one of those things where afterwards you're like, well, that's not what we thought it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot, there's a lot of advice in the Initiating Successful Threesomes program. Cause I talk about that in certain ways. Like there's a lot of things that we can, you can cover, and it's better to cover in a program cause you can listen to it over and over again. And, yeah. you know, I do have a little worksheet book that you can print out and you and your partner can write answers down. Cause I think, you know, when you really start looking at, hey, how do we do this? Like asking yourself really good questions and doing some writing exercises. It sounds so cheesy, but it can be so useful for you and your partner to then compare answers and have more conversations, which hopefully will save you all the crash and burn, you know, implosions and headaches that I went through in my first couple of dozen, you know, threesomes. Like I have had some horrible mistakes, and I just, you know, and it's just, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to go through all the horror that I went through.
Learn from my pain.
Exactly.
Oh, well, thank you so much for writing in, Riffle. And Reed, we are at the end of our super amazing hour. It zoomed by. I would love for you to share with everybody how they can find more about you and stay in touch.
Yeah. So the main website is readaboutsex.com, readaboutsex.com. It's almost on all social media. It's at readaboutsex everywhere. It is Reed Mihalko on LinkedIn. And you can check out like other courses, that you can sign up for my newsletter list there on readaboutsex.com. But then there's a relationship 10X, the number 10X.com and sex10xonline.com are two online programs that have some free training videos you can sign up for and then see if you want to geek out with me more on an online course. So, and people can always just email me and ask me questions. I can't respond to everything, but I do try to read everything, and I have, you know, I answer a lot of questions on my YouTube channel.
Yay. Well, yay. I have all of those links on sexgetsreal.com for this episode. So everyone can be super easy and just clicking through to find you and all the courses that you mentioned. Mm. So, I want to thank you, Reed, for coming on the show. It was long overdue and so much fun. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Dawn. It was awesome, as always.
You're welcome. And to everybody who tuned in, thank you so much. Of course, if you have any questions or comments, you can go to sexgetsreal.com and hit me up. I will do my best to answer that in the coming weeks and months. And of course, make sure you're also signed up for the newsletter so you can find out what this month's theme for Listener Confessions is. Thank you so much, and I will talk to you next week.